105 phone-in with Frank Mitchell. 105.
Busy programme between now and the middle of the day. The Social Investment Fund, SIF, it often has been in the headlines for all the wrong reasons. And now a report from the Auditor General says there's no clear audit trail. How was it actually set up in such a way? We'll be asking that question this morning. The disadvantages or the advantages of having a bus shelter outside your house, it's led to, well, something of a row in South Armagh. And also beer brewers of the country. They are uniting in Belfast. We'll speak to some of them. And Jerry Armstrong. Yes, Jerry will be in the studio a little later. Find out why as this morning goes by. So 0289033105 is the best number to get us on. Now, a major report into the multi-million pound social investment fund that was set up by the Stormont executive to tackle poverty in Northern Ireland has found significant failings. Kieran Donnelly, the Controller and Auditor General, has been highly critical of how the SIF, as it's known, was designed and implemented. And he's been speaking to our news team.
Well, this is a very large fund. £80 million with a very laudable purpose of tackling different aspects of social deprivation. But the main area of concern was the lack of a clear audit trail showing how projects were selected for funding. And I think that's the main point, is a point about transparency. So that's probably the key point in the report. Second point really was around conflicts of interest, and the way the scheme was set up didn't give rise to lots of conflicts of interest, and these were not always well handled. There was also a delay in getting projects started. The scheme was originally intended to close in 2015, but it was extended for 5 years and will now run to 2020. We've made 7 recommendations in the report, and the civil service will respond to those in due course. But what's really important is that lessons are learned in terms of future schemes.
You sometimes wonder, will lessons ever be learned with the way they run things up at Stormont? It was the Alliance Party who referred the Social Investment Fund to the Audit Office. It was Chris Little from the Alliance Party, and they've been very vocal in their criticism of elements of this particular SIF fund. I want to speak to one of the representatives, Stephen Farry. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
If you were to analyse it, you will not find it very difficult to come up with negatives. But there's also an important story to be told here, that people have benefited from this highly criticised scheme. There are people who are better off today because it is in play.
Yes, you can indeed make that point, Frank. But in doing so, you need to ask yourself the question, I mean, could those outcomes have been achieved through a different route? I was a minister whenever the Social Investment Fund was being set up for employment and learning. There's other people being ministers for social development. So we had employability schemes, we had neighbourhood renewal schemes, and they were essentially having their budgets cut at the same time as the Social Investment Fund was being set up. And what that was about was essentially putting the control into different hands. And as we have seen, and as was predicted at the time, major gaps and failings in terms of governance. So no doubt there's good work being done, but the question has to be, could you have actually done a lot more with those resources through a different route, and at the same time had proper transparency and accountability around it all?
So for you, where are the main flaws?
Well, the flaws are massive. Now, it's important to understand this is a report into how the scheme worked from the point of view of the civil service. I think a major question has to be around the whole political management of this, why this was set up in the first place by the DUP and Sinn Féin, and how it was then operated. But in essence, what has happened is you've had a number of different steering groups appointed, political representatives through the Dáil process, therefore mainly DUP and Sinn Féin, and in turn they had then appointed a number of community groups, community representatives through an arbitrary process, creating divisions within the community and voluntary sector between those on the inside and those on the outside. And then those steering groups then appointed the lead partner without any procurement process. And then in turn, then they asked for bids coming in. So the process was flawed in many, many different layers. You then have an absence of minutes being taken. Where have you heard that before? No proper declarations around conflict of interest. So right from the top to the bottom, we're seeing major failings here. And I mean, if it wasn't for RHI, I mean, dominating the news over the past couple of years, I mean, this would be viewed quite rightly as being an extremely serious and damning report.
Is this something that merits an inquiry like RHI?
Well, I think it does, and it's important to appreciate that the Audit Office can take this so far. The Audit Office also did a report into RHI, but there are wider issues here that do need to be asked around the decision-making at a political level, and indeed why civil servants allowed this to happen under their watch. It's not as if people weren't pointing these problems out at the time. This is not something that's only becoming apparent with hindsight. People were very much aware of the failings right from the very start, because our party representatives, and indeed from others, were making those points all along.
You see, people will be shocked at the like of this when they stop to digest it, that some schemes were found to have conflict of interests, as you've suggested, with, in some cases, employees of groups which received funding also sitting on the steering panels that allocated the money. If you allow that to happen, you are putting up flags that are going to be flown in a very negative way about your procedures.
Yes, and that then begs the question around decision-making. And the question has to be asked, I mean, were there different groups, different organisations that could have actually achieved and delivered some of the projects on a stronger footing than what has been offered? So while we may see things that are good, does that preclude things being done better by different organisations if we had a more transparent and effective decision-making process? So this is very heavily compromised. And I think people do need to really now ensure that we have a change in procedure. So I do welcome that the Executive Office have certainly reflected and accepted the recommendations, but we do need to know a lot more about why this actually happened in the first place and who was pulling the strings.
This is the same fund that was very much in the headlines in 2016. There was this row over an alleged UDA leader having a role as a chief executive of a charity awarded a contract to look after over £1.5 million. Would people have now lost faith in SIF? Will they be worried or concerned that someone's going to be scrutinising what they think is very well distributed SIF money, putting maybe a perfect scheme at risk?
Well, schemes that are there obviously need to follow through to conclusion. There has been talk in the past about a SIF 2 being brought into operation. I think we need to really pause and reflect. The various things that SIF is trying to achieve can be done through different structures, indeed through proper government channels. I used to run schemes in relation to what term needs, those not in employment, education and training, and we were able to turn around similar sums of money, if not greater sums of money, a lot more quickly and efficiently, but with proper decision making and transparency around how that was happening. So there are different ways in which we can achieve this. So this is not a question about is it right to invest in communities in terms of employability, in terms of poverty, providing infrastructure. Of course, that is what we should be doing. The question is, can we do it through a different means that delivers not just as good results, but indeed even better results, Frank?
Are you surprised at all that the DUP are backing the Social Investment Fund? Emma Little-Pengelly, the Member of Parliament for South Belfast, saying the Social Investment Fund represented an innovative approach to tackling issues within communities where previous attempts had failed to deliver outcomes. The programme has benefited so many communities in some of the most deprived neighbourhoods right across Northern Ireland, and many thousands of people's lives have been improved by it. It's critical that those people who have been able to benefit in a deprived community don't in some way, because of the scrutiny it's now been given, lose out through absolutely no fault of theirs.
Well, I'm surprised that Emma is trying to pull the wool over people's eyes in that respect. I mean, she and her colleagues were very much involved in this process and were alert to the concerns that were being voiced by many people. But the central point, Frank, has to be, of course, we want to help people in communities, but there are different ways of doing it. I mean, SIF was certainly innovative, but I would say innovative in a very negative way rather than a positive way. But, for example, we had neighbourhood renewal through the Department of Social Development before SIF was invented. We've had a strategy in terms of those not in education, employment and training under the Department for Employment and Learning back in the day of the Social Investment Fund. So programs were available to do exactly the same type of outcomes that we are achieving. You could have set up a new fund in terms of small-scale capital investment, but had a different decision-making process. So the issue is not the principle of investing in communities. It's about how you do it and the structures around which you frame it. And this process was about taking the power out of certain hands and putting it into other hands. And that's where the real insidious nature of the Social Investment Fund lies.
You would have heard on our news the Ulster Unionist MLA, Mike Nesbitt, he described the report as damning. And indeed, Nicola Mallon, she's been reported from the SDLP as saying it's a failing on behalf of the executive office departmental officials who are ultimately accountable for public spending. You're criticising the DUP and Sinn Féin. Is it not possibly politicians just queuing up now to criticise those who were well-intentioned?
No, because we have now what is a rigorous report from the Northern Ireland Audit Office. I mean, this is objectivity. I mean, the irony here, Frank, is in December, 6th of December 2016, we put a motion before the Assembly calling for a top-to-bottom review of the Social Investment Fund. We were told by DUP and Sinn Féin at that stage that it wasn't required and that they voted that review down. Now, today it's very, very, very clear that that motion had merit, clear merit, and there were very significant failings. The irony is actually that was the same day that the documentary on the RHI scandal was broadcast. So one three-letter acronym of a scandal replaced another three-letter acronym in terms of the public consciousness. But at that time in 2016, people were very, very clearly aware of the issues around the Social Investment Fund. And it's not just us, it's not just other political parties. There were voices in the community. What this was about actually was creating divisions in the community sector. We have a situation where far, far too often the community voluntary sector have to hold back their voices because they depend upon patronage from the two leading parties. That's not a healthy society. It's not a pluralist society. And this was creating a situation where those organisations that wanted to go along, had those very powerful connections, were seen to be on the inside loop, and those that didn't were excluded. And that does create tensions in communities and those working in the sector.
And finally, Stephen Farry, could the political image of Northern Ireland and the senior elements of civil service take another blow like the RHI inquiry if we had a SIF inquiry? Would people not lose faith totally in how the country's been run?
Well, I think it's probably better that we have all these issues out on the table, Frank, and we have those discussions. And we fully understand what has been going on. But there's no doubt, I mean, if we are to have a restored executive, hopefully in the very near future, we are going to have some very serious reforms around how we do business, the transparency and accountability in government and how public funds are managed. It's important that the public do have faith in their structures, and certainly trust and confidence is broken down on many fronts. But unless you properly diagnose the problem, you can't properly fix it.
Okay, Stephen Farry of the Alliance Party, thank you. I want to speak to Raymond McCartney from Sinn Féin. Raymond McCartney, good morning.
Good morning to you, Frank.
I was just reading this comment a little earlier in the programme. The Social Investment Fund represented an innovative approach to tackling issues within communities where previous attempts had failed to deliver outcomes. The programme has benefited so many communities in some of the most deprived neighbourhoods right across Northern Ireland, and many thousands of people's lives have been improved by it. Those are the words of Emma Little-Pengelly of the DUP. Do you agree with her on that?
Well, I think the projects, first of all, they set the Social Investment Fund in context. It was an innovative project. It was designed to ensure that communities had a greater input into what they believed was the facilities that were being delivered on the ground, were the facilities which they wanted rather than sometimes a central government deciding. There's absolutely no doubt in the Auditor General, and he's to be thanked for his report, that there were fundamental flaws in the design of the scheme. This led to some bad practices, and we now have to ensure that those bad practices are removed and that there's no possibility as we go forward. In the constituency of Derry, in Foyle, where I'm an MLA, there was 8 projects put on the ground. I think the steering group, and it would be interesting to hear the Auditor General's view of the steering group in Derry, because it was cross-party, all the community and voluntary sector, the various sectors represented on it. I would believe that if our steering groups hadn't followed their example, then we wouldn't have this type of report today.
Now, some schemes were found to have conflicts of interest, very highly highlighted from the Auditor General. In some cases, employees of groups which received funding were also sitting on the steering panels that allocated the money. It just reminds us of Stormont not really doing their job properly. And we've RHI emblazoned across the headlines for the last X number of weeks. Would you welcome an inquiry into SIF?
Well, I think that the Auditor General this morning, in pointing out the flaws in administration and in governance and openness and transparency, has also said that some of these issues are now being examined by the RHI inquiry, by Patrick Coughlin's inquiry. I think it would be best to wait the outcome of that and see what lessons can be learned. But certainly as we go forward, and I will make no defence of anyone who doesn't act in an open and transparent way, if people acted without due probity, then it should be investigated. But in fairness, I think we have to say this, that many, many schemes reached the ground and did have an impact. I know in Derry, and in particular one, the Community Work Programme, which allowed many, many people who were distant from the labour market to go on to 2 years of very, very good training with an employer, getting a half-decent wage, and many, many of them then find employment. That was the design of the programme. That should have been the outcome. And the administration, the good governance, and sometimes in the flaws in the process, should have been identified and corrected.
Sinn Féin, as a senior partner in government or a senior party in government, can't distance themselves from this.
No, we all have to accept our responsibility. That's what the independent report from the Auditor General is about. I think we have to sort of put it in the context that this was a new scheme. It was innovative, but I'm not going to defend, nor should anyone defend, some of the practices in some of the steering groups. That should have been seen earlier and called out and ensured that didn't happen. But the Auditor General himself said that some of the flaws at the beginning were identified and there was better governance. That's not, nor will I try and mitigate against those who acted in an inappropriate way.
Stephen Farrey of the Alliance Party was making reference to, if you were on the inside, if you knew people, you were at an advantage. That reeks of politics of generations ago.
Yes, and if Stephen has instances about that, then he should bring it to the table. We do know of allegations being made in particular projects. I don't want to do that this morning without proper evidence to support that. But I can tell you that in terms of Foyle and many, many other projects, these have made an impact on the ground. You know, the redevelopment of the Brandywell Stadium, play parks, football pitches, right across the city. And I don't think anybody in Derry would be looking on today and saying this is about inside or being outside or whatever. I think people would say that this delivered on the ground. And indeed, the Derry example, perhaps if going forward, is the one we should be trying to adhere to, because it did make an impact and that was the design of the project.
Do you understand, Raymond, that people looking in and they say no government at all at the moment, but when we do have an executive, we have the likes of RHI, we have the likes of SIF, we have very, very little to be proud of whenever you guys are running the country?
Well, I think across many, many departments, and there are instances of good governance and public representatives and public servants doing their job. and it's all of our jobs. And I think that's why like Sinn Féin, it was Martino Miller, called for and set up the inquiry and the RTA, because it became very apparent. Whereas sometimes, and I'm not making no excuses, you know, there can be poor governance, there can be poor administration because people just want a better equipped or better qualified. The Auditor General said in his report he instances around him, perhaps more expertise should be brought in when these type of schemes are being set up. But certainly none of us should make any excuses. Indeed, we should be affronted, particularly in issues like around the RHI, when you hear people talking, you know, fill your boots. There should be no room, no space, nor no truck for anyone with that type of approach towards public money.
And you're confident that no one in the nationalist or Republican community filled their boots with this one?
No, because I think even for the many, many flaws within it, I think most people, even the Auditor General, saying that the projects hit the ground. Now, there are some discussion around value for money, and value for money is always a very welcome debate. In some instances, and I would defend this, that a project on the ground may not make economic sense from an accountant's point of view, but from a social point of view. So some people, and this has always been an ongoing debate when there's big housing developments, many people in the open market might say, you know, it doesn't make value for money sense to have a play park. But if you live in those type of developments, that's what you want to see. And that's what these projects identified. Perhaps gaps in places where there should be play facilities, this was identified, particularly in the community work program, identifying people long-term unemployed, people distant from the labour market. Indeed, this week we talked about, you know, the need to address issues around mental health, people who perhaps because of mental health issues weren't very employable in the past. The community work program in Derry opened up the possibility and provided much needed employment. So the intention of the scheme was good. The working out, the governance left a lot to be desired, and that's what we should take forward.
Well, it did leave a lot to be desired when there was no clear audit trail for so much money being used by people out and about in the community.
Absolutely, and I make no defence of that. No defence, that is totally and absolutely wrong.
Okay, Raymond McCartney, thank you very much indeed for your time this morning.